Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
Yeah, I understand that was the third worst defense in the NFL. I understand it was the Lions. But you were watching. You had a sense with Khalil Mack sacking quarterbacks, with Allen Robinson making plays, with Mitch Trubisky doing things, that this was a legitimate playoff contender.
I think you knew that they were a significantly better team with Khalil Mack on it. I'm not sure that we understood how significantly better they can be with Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson looked like a number one receiver.
Yes, he did.
Looked like the guy that can make the big play down the field and looked like a game changer.
You have a bona fide NFL modern day passing game. You have one of the fiercest pass rushes in the league. And you're a legitimate playoff contender because of the moves you made in the offseason.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Good morning, guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
Get your effing mind right and getting in someone's face. I can promise you this, that doesn't work for everybody.
Did you ever get in a kicker's face?
Yeah, I mean, a few times, but not about kicking, just about, you know, some guys run their mouth in the weight room when kickers shouldn't be talking.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to The Score. You gotta love Oler's response to that.
Good morning, Molly. Yeah, you do. You talking to me? I'm talking to you. You talking to me?
Are you talking while I'm lifting? Are seen you, and not heard.
Are you using my valuable oxygen? Get out of here, kicker.
Oh, boy. Well, it wasn't a great night in Chicago sports, Mr. David. The Bulls fall to the Dallas Mavericks 103-98. That's a bad Mavericks team.
Boy.
But that's a really bad Bulls team.
Bad beat worse by 5 points.
Bad going on, and we will get a chance to see the new team for one Jimmy Butler tomorrow. I believe he will debut against Orlando.
Not exactly holding my breath there.
With his 76ers team.
I'm not on the edge of my seat. Lauri Markkanen, bad news with him in terms of going to be another 2 weeks or so. I guess that's bad news. Some people will interpret that as like, all right, take as long as you need, Lauri. Take as long as you need. If you can't beat the Mavericks at home.
If you find a way to lose that team.
I don't want to go through another season like that. I don't think anybody in the Bulls front office wants to watch that or preside over that at the same time.
Get another dookie.
Boy, those dookies are impressive.
Yeah. Go. Just.
I got to tell you.
Get one of those guys.
What seed would they be in the Eastern Conference?
Get a Duke draft class and you could win an NBA title.
How many Duke guys does it take to change a light bulb? I mean, how many Duke guys do the Bulls really want to accumulate here?
I think you want one of those guys, don't you? And what
right
Del Carter
Jr.
is pretty good. He's okay. I got no real complaints about him.
But the Bulls are hard to watch.
Well, the Bulls are really hard to watch.
Yeah.
And partly because, you know, they got the point guard that plays his rear end off and is a tough kid, but I'm not sure you want him in that essential role.
You're putting this on Archie Diacono?
No. I'm just saying he's emblematic of what's going on with them right now. The injury's so severe. He plays hard.
You know what? I think he's
a central figure in what they're doing.
When you are at the position where you have to rely on him to be an essential part of your team.
And I don't
you
mean
know
that,
where you are.
Yeah.
That's
not an insult.
That's NBA reality.
There's some really good point guards in the NBA.
Boy, Zach LaVine.
The Blackhawks. Okay, go ahead. Say it. Say
Zach, 8-23.
Say what you want to say about his 3-point shooting.
Didn't hit any out of 6.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Yeah. I mean, those dunks are pretty, but, you know, 0 for 6.
Yeah, if you can't hit the 3, you can't be with me.
At least the Blackhawks.
The Blackhawks, they did take a lead, and they did grow the lead. And the 2-0 lead fell apart, and they lost 3-2 in overtime. And they are now 0-3 since getting rid of Joel Quenneville, 0-8 since the glorious start to the season.
But they got a
since
point
the playoff buzz.
On the dad's trip. They got a point on the dad's trip. I don't know if you heard that. They got a point, Molly.
I heard it was
tough to watch. Boy, I love watching the Hawks, and I'm sitting there, and I happened to be on my own last night watching hockey, which is not such a bad thing, really. I mean, really, I love watching hockey, and it gets to overtime and you think, oh, wow.
Yeah.
When the Hawks play overtime, usually it's Taze, Kane, and Keith. And they go round and round they go, and it's a gimmick, and it's 3-on-3, and they've played a lot of overtime games this year.
Yes, they have.
And one thing you always think when they are in overtime is if Patrick Kane is on the ice, they got a shot.
Sure.
Because something's going to happen in those first 30 seconds of wide-open hockey that he's going to make something magical happen, right?
You would think that.
So overtime, which I don't really like the 3-on-3, but I'll put up with it. So I'm watching the 3-on-3.
As long as you win.
As long as you win. And I'm watching the 3-on-3, and I'm waiting for the overtime, and I see, wait, this must be a mistake. Patrick Kane must be hurt. He's not on the ice to start the overtime. I don't understand what I'm watching here. I'm yelling at the TV screen like some fool watching hockey alone, and they lose.
The today's date, for those not paying close attention, is November 13th. So we are one day away from midway through November. The Blackhawks got a point for the first time since the 28th of October.
Oh, my God.
That's a few days, but you're still going to the pumpkin patch at that point. That is before Halloween.
So and you're desperate for a point.
It's more than 2 weeks.
Why is Patrick
you got
Kane
a point
on the bench to start overtime?
Well, I don't know what Joel was thinking. Oh.
I know what Joel was thinking.
Yeah.
I'll have another, please.
Joel was thinking, why is Patrick Kane on the bench?
Where's my cigar? This couch is comfortable.
This couch is nice, but I may rest more comfortably on my laurels.
Has Racky's check cleared yet?
Matt Nagy wants to find a Bears running game, says it falls on the coaches to figure it out. That's the problem.
You believe him?
No. I think having problems blocking it up, buddy. I think they're down a guard and they're down two guards and something's going on.
Okay, fine. I mean, whatever they're down in terms
I'm
of.
I'm saying.
Do you think
they
that
were
it matters
a right-handed
to him?
Team? Oh, not remotely.
Not remotely. Okay.
I don't think he's looking for the running game at all.
That's what I want to establish. This
fair
sort
enough.
Of.
But I think I understand why they're not running the ball. Is what I'm saying. The right side of their line was where they wanted to run the ball. Kyle Long is gone. Now, Kush is not really a part of the rotation anymore. Is that injury related or is that talent related? Whatever's going on.
No, I think that they're
on their third guard.
Brian Witzman is the guy that gets the bulk of the snaps now. And
that's
he's the
point.
Former chief, and they're not able to run the ball. I don't know how much they've emphasized it. And frankly, I don't know how much they're worried about it.
I don't think they should be.
I
think the quarterback's figuring out.
And I've come around to this idea system. That the Bears
that
offense.
They should have traded Jordan Howard when they had the chance.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
No, I wouldn't go that far.
I think it's a nice weapon to have. And I don't even know if it's a weapon. I think it's a nice element of your offense that you have a power running game that you think if it's third and one or.
Right.
Fourth and a yard.
If you ever really need it, do you really need it?
You have an
it?
Option.
If you ever really need it.
And I don't want to take anything away from what he's accomplished the first 2 years in the NFL, but I don't know that this offense cares about using the run to set up the pass when you can use the pass to set up the run.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they want to set up the inside run.
I think they use short passes to set up long passes and long passes to set up shorter passes.
That's probably closer to what they're doing.
As long as it's passing. I think they're fine.
They use the long pass to set up the short pass that ends up as a long pass.
So I think Matt Nagy knows his audience well enough to realize that he needs to
give lip service to the idea of running the football.
I want to run the football because it's November. Oh, it's snowing tonight, and I think that in Chicago, bear weather means you have to run the football.
Yeah, I don't think he has to run the football.
I'm not sure either.
I don't believe that's part of what the overall plan is.
But you know what you got to do if you do play close games, and they are going to play a close game, you have to have a kicker that you can count on.
How about this? He opened the window slightly to the idea of Soldier Field practices.
Forget about the window. Open the gates. Yeah. Let them in.
It's a possibility. And they could also bring in other kickers for auditions. How about that?
Well, I think that's wise.
Well, I think it's also he doesn't make that call.
You mean he promoted himself after the game to general manager?
I think after the game he unequivocally stuck behind his guy and wanted that message out there, and then found out that oh by the way we're bringing a couple guys in today.
I wonder if they will.
They should. Why wouldn't you? You know why, David? Here's why. It's called due diligence, Jerry Angelo. It's called even if you don't cut the guy and sign someone else, you better know who the hell's out on the street.
I'm with you.
You better know what your options are and if you have options.
Listen, there was an NFC team that cut a kicker yesterday who was guaranteed money, the $3 million, the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Not $9 million, David. That's the reason. It's $9 million. And you know what? It is also a black mark on who
another general black manager. Mark, another more wasted money on the general manager's watch.
General manager. He's going to be the GM of the year.
He is. He's the greatest GM in town. I don't know if you heard.
Hold on a second.
I read that somewhere.
Hold on a second. I can't go. If you're mocking me, I'm not going to just take that sitting down.
How did I mock you?
All right. If you're mocking the idea, I'm not going to try to make a point here.
Make your point.
The point is that you have built up that sort of you have built up all that goodwill now. If you want to take a hit on the kicker, take a hit on the kicker.
Exactly. If the kicker can't do it,
you've been right.
Don't drag the program down right. by being, you know, what loyal to the kicker.
You
can't be loyal to one player at the risk of disloyalty to every other player.
And we'll give you this one, Ryan Pace, because you were right about so many other things. If you're wrong about the kicker, fix it. It's okay.
It's okay if you can fix it.
It's okay if you can fix it.
David, I'm not sure you can fix it. I'm really not sure you can even fix it.
Because there are not any kickers out there that are any better?
I just think that...
Carlos Santos.
Yeah, that's your problem.
He's available.
So is a Roberto Aguayo. Among others.
Can you trade for Robbie Gould again?
Oh my gosh.
Trade back.
You know, the trade deadline's passed. They would need to
cut him.
Is there
a waiver wire like in baseball?
You know, that they're not going to cut Robbie Gould.
The trade deadline is long gone, pal. You cannot make a trade.
No, but is there a waiver wire? Like baseball's trade deadline's useless. I'm curious if the
there's no waiver wire. Okay. No waiver wire. I like it. There is a waiver wire, but you got to cut guys. There's no
best case
waiver trade.
How about 94 for Robbie Gould?
I got a feeling one of the 5 at 5 questions is just answered right there. We've got a lot we got to get into. We're going to talk about all of it, and we'll do that next. It's the 5 at 5. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
The Bears have opened as 3-point favorites against the Vikings. Is that a sign of respect or not? If they were considered a legitimate NFC North contender, wouldn't a team on a 3-game winning streak be favored by more?
Yeah, I think you got to understand what the line is about. The line is designed to encourage wagering. So the line is not about who's going to win the game. It's about how do you get people to bet it. And I think that... that Bear fans would feel good about the Bears covering 3 points. I don't know that they would get to 4 or 5. I think that might be too big an ask. And I think that, you know, you'd get 3 for being at home, although the home advantage has been different. So what Vegas is saying is that straight up this is a neutral match and the Bears get the 3 for being at home. In other words, Bear fans will be willing to cover the 3, but probably wouldn't go beyond that. So I think it's a fair measure of how fans feel about their team. I think there's still, you know, Bears fans feel real good about this team, but they still are afraid that they're overvalued and that they don't feel like they're a 7-point favorite over a team like Minnesota. They are ahead of them in the standings, but that could turn around, and I think there's a little hesitation. So I think in order to get the fan base to wager, 3 points is probably an accurate. I think people would say, yeah, I'll go Bears. Oh, yeah, they can win by a field goal. Of course they can. They got Cody Parkey. So I would imagine that is where it comes from. The 3 points for being at home, and basically it's a neutral site game, if it's at a neutral site game. So people would wager the 3.
I think you're right to point out that, you know, Vegas is all about the lines encouraging people to bet and encouraging people to wager. I also know in sports, players and coaches and executives tend to forget that. And they try to play up to the fact that the lines are also a sign of respect, whether that's accurate or not. Players will interpret those betting lines, underdogs and favorites, as a sign of respect and belief in what they're doing. And right now, I think that's indicative to the Bears of people not fully believing in what they're doing because of what the conversation that we had yesterday that will be going on all week. Have they beaten anybody? They have not beaten a team with a winning record. They have not beaten a team that is any good. They are not as good as the record implies. All those things can combine with this, only a 3-point favorite. You get 3 points for pulling into the stadium on the team bus if you're playing at home. That's
right.
That makes this a very even game. So nobody really thinks the Bears are going to be favored in this game other than for any other reason. They're playing on the lakefront in Chicago. So they can look at it that way. I think that it just underscores the fact that they have been, it's been so long since the Bears have been relevant in mid-November, this late in the season, that this betting line and the early line sort of reflects that.
I think the Bears have been so bad over the past few years that this is maybe, whether it's the odds makers or people around the country who follow football, following this game, saying, all right, let's see what they've got. I don't necessarily take this as a sign of disrespect. I think people are still waiting to see exactly what this team is. David, you hit it with what you just said about not having beaten anyone that's any good yet this season. They've played well, certainly. The last few games with huge first half leads, and then things get a little sloppy in the second half of both of those games. But I think it's going to be a fun game. And you know what? If the 3-point spread, if players look at stuff like that and they say, what, we're only favored by 3? Well, then all the better for the Bears.
You know, it wasn't that long ago the Vikings were in the NFC Championship game, and they were touted as having one of the best defenses in the NFL. They upgrade the quarterback position in the offseason. Everybody's looking at them as a potential candidate to get to the Super Bowl once again. And around here particularly, it seems like the Bears, and deservedly so because they've played really well, have sort of become the talk of the division once again, and the Vikings are sort of lying in the weeds, even though they're still right in this thing. And if they win on Sunday, then you flip the entire division over on its head, and we're talking about business as usual with the Vikings in first place and the Bears kind of lagging behind a little bit. So I think, essentially a pick'em line is fair at this point of the season. The Bears are playing really well, but the Vikings are more established. They arguably have more talent overall on the defensive side of the ball in particular. And, I don't think it's an insult or a slight or anything like that. I think it's very fair.
Well, Molly, you do point it out, but that we know that, but I don't think everybody else cares about that. To me, if anybody's going to be slighted, and as a fan, the Vikings should be ticked off. I mean, the Bears are actually favored. That's what would be the worrisome thing for me, the fan, is that now the Vikings have even more reason to want to come down to Soldier Field and kick a little bear tail on Sunday Night Football. So that's what I think. I don't think it's a sign of disrespect for the Vikings, and I don't want them any more motivated than they're going to be.
You asked me that same question the other day.
If Khalil Mack is the Bears' most valuable defensive player, who is the least valuable starter? What player is the weak link of the Bears' defense? Opposing offensive coordinators watch on tape and say, we've got to find a way to exploit him.
I think that if you're Viking offensive coordinator John DeFilippo, remember him? I think that he's a guy watching this tape and asking himself that very question. It's an interesting conversation they had yesterday at McNeil and Parkins just about this very question about, and it was in the context, I think, of Leonard Floyd. And I don't go there necessarily. I think Leonard Floyd is maybe the easy guy to pick on because he has underachieved this year. But if I'm watching this Bears tape, this Bears defense, and I'm studying it, I'm isolating certain guys, and I'm thinking, okay, the secondary looks pretty solid. That nickelback I want no part of if I'm an offensive coordinator. Bryce Callahan can hurt you in a variety of ways. Eddie Jackson's a playmaker. When he's engaged, and he has been for 90% of this season, he's a difference maker. But boy, Adrian Amos is a guy that I look at and I think, all right, if I can find a way, Kyle Rudolph, with a mismatch on a running back, with with a wheel route, something like that, then I'm going to find a way to make a big play or try to attempt a big play against a defense that doesn't give up a ton. And if I'm looking at the Bears 1 through 11 on that defense, or 1 through 12, because I think Bryce Callahan is sort of your 12th starter, Adrian Amos, to me, is the guy who is the most vulnerable and probably stands out as the weakest link.
That's a good call, David. I think when coordinators look at teams, the first thing they look at is they look defensively, like, who do we have to block up? And it clearly is Khalil Mack. I think Akeem Hicks is a guy you got to be aware of and you got to do some things about. I think that, you know, Danny Trevathan, Roquan Smith, Leonard Floyd, I don't really have a problem with their front seven. I don't know that Jonathan Bullard is kind of a solid starter, but, you know, their rotation is solid. I don't think that that's the area. I would look at the secondary. I would look at Adrian Amos. I think he is a guy that, you just say Eddie Jackson can play in space. He's got some speed. He can get some coverability. I know Adrian Amos, that's not his job. He's the strong safety. He's not the free safety. He's more of the extra linebacker, run stuffer type. But that would be the guy I would try to get a passing mismatch with. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, the thing about the Bears is they got a really solid group. They got a really solid scheme. I never thought that their secondary was as good as it's played this year. And, you know, I might want to go after Prince. To be honest with you, I might want to go after Kyle Fuller, even though he's made plays and he's done some really good things. But I would definitely want to go after Adrian Amos. So I would think that would be the area that I would exploit. I understand this question is designed to let Dustin rant and rave about Leonard Floyd. But, you know, if I watch Leonard Floyd on tape, he is an athlete. He can do some things. And it's not a question of running at Leonard Floyd, if that's what this question is designed to do. So I think they got a lot of guys that do a lot of different things for them. And I would just say, and I'm not picking on Amos by backing you up on it, but I think in a passing game, you're looking for mismatches. And again, he's not a cover guy.
Molly, I will leave the bulk of the Leonard Floyd discussion for Dustin, but I would definitely run at Leonard Floyd. If you're asking me to pick something, I would pick that for sure. I would definitely go after the safeties in the passing game. And my other thought at this is the Vikings have stud receivers, Thielen and Stephon Diggs. And I understand Prince and Kyle Fuller have had great seasons so far, but to me, that's strength on strength. I mean, you're gonna go after those matchups regardless.
Yeah,
of,
you go to your strength.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And Dalvin Cook is back for the Vikings. He had been injured much of the season, so you have Cook and Latavius Murray out of that backfield. I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to run the ball a lot, specifically toward Dustin's guy over there, Floyd. But you're still going to throw to your studs in the passing game, and I would certainly look for Kyle Rudolph in the middle of the field.
You know, it's going to sound a little weird because I think he's mostly played well, but Kyle Fuller is susceptible to these lapses sometimes. And it's not just, you know, dropping a pick in Green Bay, but it's every few games or so, let's say, he gets picked out and targeted systematically for an entire game. And sometimes he's able to cope with it, and other times you might have a guy go off for 150 yards and a couple of scores. I still think that while he's handsomely paid and mostly he's been worth it, he does still have these lapses in his games where he can be the point of attack. And I think if Cousins is able to get the ball in tight spaces near Fuller, depending on who he's defending, whether it is Diggs or Thielen, I think that it can be a little susceptible there. So I'm not, you know, saying that he's overpaid, he stinks,
right,
you know, bench him, anything like that.
They got
good
corners, but not shutdown corners.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was trying to say. They have good cornerbacks, but you don't have, you know, Deion Sanders in his prime over there.
So this should be trending in the Minnesota Vikings. Hashtag run at Floyd. Run at Floyd. Hashtag run at, with the at sign, Floyd. That's what I would do. But the Thielen matchup, that's going to be interesting. Now, who do you put on Thielen? Okay, is that one of the underrated guys? Like,
they don't do that. They don't move guys back and forth.
Okay, so who's on? Who? Okay, so
then, it's either. Yeah.
No, wait a minute. Now it's either. Who is it? Don't say they don't move guys around. Who's on Thielen?
They don't move guys around.
Okay, so who's on Thielen?
So wherever he lines up, whatever side he
both
lines
guys
up on,
potentially
but he might line up in the slot.
Well, then Bryce Callahan would be on him.
That's the matchup. But, okay, that's the matchup.
So you just go with your guy.
Well, no, but if I'm Minnesota, my point is,
so
if
you're
I'm
not
going to
say Highway 94 open, no waiting. You've changed your answer. Your first answer was run it, Floyd.
Okay. Well, lots of people on this panel give like six answers to the question.
Okay. I'm
so
sorry.
So my one answer will be hashtag run it, Floyd.
Okay. With an at, with a circle. I don't think
trending
he's just doing a leg pull here, if that's the question.
Which United Center tenant had the worst loss last night and why? Which game captured your attention?
Well, undoubtedly, the Blackhawks had the worst loss because they got to overtime. You know, the Blackhawks had the worst loss because they haven't had a win in so long. Because the new coach needs a win. Win one for the new guy. It is really rough to watch a team go 0-5, fire the coach, and follow with 0-3. I mean, does that – let me ask you. Does the 0-8 losing streak count, or is it really 0-3 after the 0-5? I mean, how do we break it up? I don't know. It just seems like a lot of loss upon loss. The guy got his first point. Did they give him the puck? I don't know how it works. I'm just asking. So I did watch I watched both games. I was back and forth. And I didn't care for the NFL game, which ended up being pretty good, as it turned out, so much for benching Eli Manning. He led a late drive, threw a couple touchdowns to Odell Beckham Jr., and then threw a third touchdown to whomever. It wasn't Odell, so I lost interest. But they ended up winning that game at the end. And
that was a dreadful game.
It didn't hold my attention.
Nick Mullins didn't do it for me.
So it was a Sterling Shepard sighting for you there, Molly.
Yeah, that's who it was. And I went back and forth watching both games, but I found myself, and I don't know why, I just there's something about the NBA that just I watched more of the NBA, and I was kind of hate watching it because I was laughing at it and I was trying to determine how good Luka Doncic is, and you know I
he's pretty good.
He's real good
for a teenager,
for a 19-year-old,
for any age.
He's actually a pretty tough kid for a European, and that's not an insult to anyone. But the European player is usually a lot more of a finesse-based guy, and he has a lot of flash to his game.
Think Nico.
But he was also not afraid to mix it up a little bit. So I liked him. But that's two really bad NBA teams going at it, and the idea that you lose that game is...
Which was worse?
I'm going to say that losing to Dallas is significantly worse, but... The losing streak is what makes the Hawks worse.
I kind of with you. I think the losing to Dallas at home makes that a worse loss. But the one that captured my attention, the Hawks went up 2-0. It was Cam Ward's homecoming. They had a nice little photo collage for him. They had a nice little moment. Cam Ward was making things happen, making saves all over the place. This was like, okay, they're going to get this victory for Jeremy Culleton, the 33-year-old kid. And then they blow a 2-goal lead. And then Tavo, of all people, scores. Time in Carolina. And then they go into overtime. And I'm sitting there, as we talked about earlier, and I'm waiting for Patrick Kane to save the day, to save the night, to entertain me. And he's on the bench to begin overtime. And where's Alex DeBrincat? He never got off the bench during overtime. And I'm like, what are you doing here? So, you know, yeah, it's bad to lose to the Mavericks at home. But I think the Hawks' loss annoyed me more. Because they teased me into thinking, okay, it was 2-0. They're going to win this game. They're going to come out with a victory. And then they do that.
I think all you need to know about this question is that while we were watching Bulls Mavericks last night at my house, my 6-year-old demanded that I turn on the Giants Niners game. Not because he loves football, but he does. But he loves Odell Beckham Jr. So we had to watch that instead of the Zach LaVine-led Bulls. Or the Hawks were others receiving votes in this category. But I, in the spirit of the question, I would say the Hawks is the worst loss. Because I don't think at this point, I mean, what can you expect from the Bulls minus all the guys that are out injured? I think that expectation will rise when they get Markkanen back, when Chris Dunn comes back, when Bobby Portis comes back. Then maybe the Bulls will be a little bit more fun to watch. Doncic last night would have been the one reason for me to watch that game. And Zach LaVine, I don't want to say he's been a surprise, but he's been a pleasant, better than expected, I would go there. I think that is the case. But with the Blackhawks, yeah, it's let's get this new coach off the schneid. Let's get this 8-game losing streak in the rearview mirror and hopefully get the season back on track. Otherwise, to quote our intrepid reporter, David Schuster, it's going to be a long, long season at the United Center for both of these guys.
Mike, who's your son's favorite bull?
He has a Lauri Markkanen jersey, but the Markkanen factor has obviously not been in effect. His favorite basketball, see, this is where you get, because they could watch videos of everything, Steph Curry is his favorite basketball player. Yep. I have a Steph Curry shirt. I have plenty of football shirts. He has asked for Trubisky and Mac for Christmas, so we at least have that going for us in our house.
Well, that's conflict, Trubisky or Mac, if you had to choose which jersey to give your kid.
I think I'll just reward him for picking the right guys, and we'll go with both somehow. I think we'll figure that one out.
Nice. You'd still go to like Marshalls or TJ Maxx, get a Jay Cutler jersey.
He had one of those.
Way cheaper.
He had an Alshon Jeffery as well.
There's many a surplus.
And Robbie Golds?
Those are actually still in high demand after this last weekend. Well, I can tell you I didn't watch a second of the Blackhawks game last night, but I can tell you also that it was the worst loss among the two. Because I can't remember the last time the Blackhawks won a game. I don't know when it was.
The 28th of October.
The 28th of October is before Halloween.
Well, that was the last point they had.
That was the last point. It's a disaster what's going on with the Blackhawks right now. And until they win, every loss becomes worse than the one that preceded it. So this was the worst Blackhawks loss of the season last night. And the next time they lose, that will be the worst Blackhawks loss of the season. It's going to keep snowballing for Jeremy Colleton there. As far as the Bears go, or excuse me, the Bulls, I wish we were watching the Bears last night, as far as the garbage that was offered to us in its stead. I like watching Zach LaVine play a lot, and I was the first chance I got to see Doncic. I didn't know J.J. Barea was still so effective. That was a nice little surprise from the little guy off the bench.
He kills the Bulls.
He's always killed the Bulls historically. So anytime that there's a technically an NBA basketball game on, I'll tend to gravitate toward that. And Zach LaVine even had a couple of good highlights in that game, threw down a nice dunk.
Which of his six missed three-pointers was your favorite, Kevin?
The fourth one.
Okay.
Well, I think it's clearly the Bulls because they were at home. I mean, both teams are not doing well right now. Both teams were playing teams that aren't very good either. But one team had the other team at home. And the fact that Zach can't shoot. Listen, he scored 26 points. He's the only guy in the NBA to have 20 or more points in every game this season. Yada, 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 yada. I mean, and I know their roster is just injury-plagued right now. I get that. And so maybe that's why I could see where you could go with the Blackhawks because they're not facing any injuries. Maybe the roster isn't as good as John McDonough and Stan thinks.
That's why Stan was bum of the week.
That's right, bum of the week, Stan. But I'm going to go with last night,
bum
the Bulls, because it was at the United Center. For that reason and that reason alone am I going with the Bulls loss being worse because it was at home.
Dustin, great question.
The Jimmy Butler trade from the Timberwolves to the 76ers was finalized Monday. Does it change anything you thought about the Bulls or their deal with the T-Wolves, which looks like a bigger steal now? And are the Sixers the new favorite in the East?
I think that you look at the Sixers in the East and you certainly have to wonder that, but with the Celtics not exactly off to a great start, you look at the Raptors, though, and I think they probably will emerge as a favorite, as a team that, you know, will start to play better together and begin to distance themselves a little bit. Maybe I just don't want to see the Sixers emerge as the East. I'm going to look at that as very looking in the mirror there. I don't want the Sixers to emerge as a favorite in the East because I don't like Jimmy Butler. I think I didn't like him when he was here because of what he did to that locker room. I think he's on his third team for a reason, and none of the reasons are basketball related. He's a star. I give him credit for making himself into an NBA superstar because he worked his butt off to go from that kid from Tomball, Texas, into an NBA all-star, but he has gone all Hollywood. He orchestrated this whole thing. And I know it doesn't reflect well on Tom Thibodeau, the way this all went down, but I think it reflects worse on Jimmy Butler. What this says about the Bulls deal was they were ahead of things. They saw this coming. They anticipated that he was a guy you didn't want as part of your organization in your locker room around anybody else that he could infect. So to me, when you look at what the Timberwolves got from the Sixers in return for Jimmy Butler, you've got to feel better as a Bulls fan that you got three guys that you believe can be part of your foundation moving forward for a guy that you didn't want to have.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I feel like if I'm sitting here trying to figure out, here's the problem I have with the Bulls and the trade with Butler. I think the Bulls won the trade if you evaluate the different players that are involved in it, right? But I haven't seen enough of those players. And I think that all in all, the Bulls would have been better off with Jimmy than they would be with, I mean, it's three guys. It's Dunn, who's still out.
I think you have to put Carter in there too, though, because trading Jimmy and being bad led them to Wendell Carter as well.
Well, I'm not going to do that because that didn't happen at the time.
You must.
And I think they thought they were going to get better, Kevin. I don't think they made that trade in order to get worse. And I think Zach LaVine's the best player out of that because we haven't seen Markkanen. I think all those guys could be pretty good, but we've never seen them on the floor together. How many number of times have we seen them? Whereas Jimmy seems to play whenever he wants to. So I just think that as I break down these trades, that, you know, the Sixers are a better team right now with Jimmy Butler than they would be with whatever it was, Covington, Saric, and Bayless. You know, they're not great players that they got in return. I understand that. I would rather have the Bulls haul from Minnesota than the haul that Minnesota got from the 76ers, if that makes any sense. But I can't say that Jimmy isn't the best player in all of those trades, and it's all about best players in the NBA. So I think that the 76ers do indeed become a significantly better team now that they've got that deal done. And I think that Karl Anthony Towns may end up being kind of the winner of the whole thing because he's got help and he's a real good player. Now, is there going to be friction? Is there going to be...
Absolutely. Well, there's going to be friction.
All of that will work itself out on the floor if this team decides to win. And I think a lot of people felt that the 76ers were close to being able to win. So, you know, when you look at Simmons and Karl Anthony Towns and Butler, that sounds pretty good to me. And it's all about front-end talent in the NBA. And I know no one wants to hear it, but I think the 76ers are now legitimately Eastern Conference sleeper team, if not favorite team. And they may have been that before they got Jimmy. So it just helps them. And Jimmy, love him or hate him, has a lot of self-belief and will help him win games.
Yeah, the Sixers were the sexy, fun team last year. And I think now, dare I say, they have created a team of three alphas with Embiid. And you've got Ben Simmons and now Butler. So...
Karl Anthony Towns, Embiid is what I meant to say. Karl Anthony Towns does win the fantasy war, though, because his numbers are going to go way up.
For sure. Well, and you almost feel bad for poor Tom Thibodeau there in Minnesota trying to build around his young guys, and he gave away a bunch of young guys to get Jimmy, and now he's giving away Jimmy for less than that and whatever. Yeah. He
trusted the wrong guy.
That's correct. What he did. That's exactly correct. I like the Sixers. I think Boston still, despite their early struggles, has got to be, in my mind, the favorite. But in terms of the trade, I mean, I was lukewarm to it at first before we saw anything of Lauri Markkanen. But after seeing him last year, I like Chris Dunn. I know he's been hurt. And I've been, favorably impressed by Zach LaVine so far this season, despite the three-point shooting last night. I liked the Bulls trade a lot better now than I did then. Remains to be seen, I guess, based on injuries. You know, let's get these guys out there together and see what this is. Because right now, right, unless you're watching to see if Archie Diakono should be on your roster, there's not a lot of good, fun things watching this Bulls team right now. It's a difficult watch sometimes, minus all the guys that are injured.
Well, I'm a little bit higher on the trade and then the assets the Bulls got back for Jimmy Butler than I apparently some other people on this.
I'm with you,
here.
Kevin.
Haven't
I'm
seen
with
it.
You.
Haven't seen it, buddy. No, haven't seen him play.
I am with you. I did.
I would love to call that a huge win for the Bulls, but I haven't seen him play.
Having them all healthy at the same time, which has been very elusive, would be it would make you feel a lot better about it, certainly. I'm not debating that at all. And when injuries start to become, you know, happen with more frequency, then they start to become a problem potentially long term. I mean, who's to say that Chris Dunn's ever going to be a guy you can rely on?
What have the Bulls done since Jimmy left? They've lost. Period. End of story.
They wore some really nice jerseys on Saturday night.
I love that jersey. We should have talked about that. The Chicago flag.
I do like those.
I love that jersey.
I'm with you there.
See, spinning the conversation to a more positive.
You are such a happy go lucky guy.
That is a great uniform. I love that uniform.
Oh,
get out of here. Get out of here.
They're for listeners.
Oh, fantastic. It's radio, but Bully is now holding up a number 24 marketing jersey.
I'm all over it, man.
Wow.
You'll get to wear his jersey before he does this season. And that's very nice.
Out of here.
Awesome.
You know, a team that has been dominating the Eastern Conference this year, the Milwaukee Bucks, with their new head coach they brought in, Mike Budenholzer, I believe, is the man. They look completely different. And, you know, they have obviously a ton of talent there. They have one of the top 10 players in the league in Antetokounmpo. They could definitely be a contender coming out the East. I still think it's going to be Boston, but I really like that Toronto and Milwaukee and Philly have made it more interesting, where it's not just a foregone conclusion who you're going to see representing the Eastern Conference. So in that regard, I do like the move for Philly. It's going to make them better, no question, and it'll make them more interesting too.
Well, I definitely think it makes the 76ers more interesting. It definitely makes the East more interesting. The East needed to get more interesting. And based on what the 76ers sent to Minnesota, how could you not like what the Bulls got for Jimmy Butler? Imagine if Jimmy Butler had still been on this roster right at this moment. Now, I know it would look different because those guys wouldn't be here from Minnesota, but imagine if that's all you could get, because he had just decided, you know what, I'm just not going to play. I'm only going to play, because he was in the East now, I'm only going to play when we play the Celtics and when we play the Raptors, and then I'm going to sit out for the next 10 consecutive days.
Yes.
Imagine if that was the situation. So I almost feel like we have to consider ourselves as Bulls fans lucky that this happened. So I think this was good for the Bulls, and I think this was good for the 76ers. And overall, I think this is good for the Eastern Conference of the NBA because it makes things more interesting.
I think it's hard to answer those questions.
Northwestern coach Pat Fitzgerald said Monday that he will approach the final two games before the Big Ten title game like normal, because college football isn't Major League Baseball or the NBA. Is that Fitz letting his heart overrule his head? Short-sighted or understandable?
Fitz is building a football program. Fitz is building a team that he believes can be a championship team. You play to win the games. You should beat the teams he can beat, and there is no shadow about it. He's got to. There's no shadow of a doubt. He has got to win. They've got to build an attractive resume as a winner of one half of that bracket, so that they can go to a decent bowl game, regardless of whether or not they end up in the Rose Bowl as the Big Ten champion or whatever it might be. They've got to make sure. They lost to Akron, man. They got to win their Big Ten games and build up that resume and make themselves attractive. The idea of resting guys and taking time off, that's not college football. That is not – how does that help a program? He's building a culture of victory, and it's only going to help him moving forward. The more games they win, it's only going to help him be able to take down Michigan or Ohio State, whoever it may be, coming out of the other side in the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis.
You.
Totally different animal.
Yes.
I'm all over it. Fitz, God bless you.
God bless you, Fitz. In 80 seconds, he summed up my entire approach to sports. I love everything he said. I listened to it yesterday at his press conference, and I wanted to go tape my wrists and get the eye black. I mean, it was ready. He gets you ready to go, because this is college football. Every Saturday matters. I don't care what you're playing for in December. He doesn't care what you're playing for in December. Next Saturday is a big game. He's convinced himself.
Yep.
He's convinced those 90 guys in his locker room that playing Minnesota matters. You know why? It does. It does matter to somebody, because somebody's going to have a moment on that Saturday afternoon that means something to them, and it means something to the program. And this is all about the program. So I love what he had to say. I'm glad he said it. And I reject the idea that you should rest for anything because you can never take any Saturday for granted, and he never does.
Can I just point out that Tough Guy Haw does not want to put a helmet on or pads. He wants to get some eye black and tape his wrist and then start beating the crap out of people.
I think we may get a go caps out of him.
That's unbelievable. He doesn't want a uniform.
No uniform.
He doesn't want pads.
Forget the pads.
He just wants to hit someone.
I just want to hit somebody.
With eye black on.
And get in the weight room and challenge Olin Krutz.
Not if you're a kicker, you don't. I think they got to play their guys. I mean, this is so is if they make the Rose Bowl, is Clayton Thorson then going to take off because he's preparing for his pro career? I mean, come on.
Don't start that.
No. You think that would actually fly in that lock? I would be shocked. No. There's no way. The good news for Fitz and the Cats is that, at the very least, one of those two games remaining before against my beloved Illini, I should not test them too much. But I think they need all the practice they can get, as Molly pointed out, you know, the non-conference schedule. A little less than stellar. And listen, I mean, they're winning games, which is awesome, and you got to find ways to win games. They are doing so. But it's not like they're blowing people's doors off and just cruising through the Western Big Ten Conference, or the Western side of the Big Ten Conference here. So let's play the guys.
Well, this segment's brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Collins and the Cats return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena on Friday as they host Binghamton. Get there early as ESPN's Pardon the Interruption will be taping live from 3:15 to 4:15. For more information, visit nusports.com/PTI. As far as the football team goes, I get the idea of wanting to, you know, stay on the gas pedal, try to get some momentum going, feel good about yourself, get in this run. But, you know, the shots that he took there at the NBA or Major League Baseball, you know, teams that do that have much more talent relatively to a Northwestern. So Northwestern kind of has to do this. They're not in a position where they can bench guys and be able to get by, you know, by sitting some of their best players. They just wouldn't be able to do it. So, you know, for this particular scenario, sure. Put your eye black on. Get out there, David.
I don't like the patronizing tone you're using there,
Kevin. I'm with
David. It's pretty scary, really.
I know I've got a few more snaps in me, and the kind of talk that you got there from Fitz. So yep. David retweeted it. I retweeted David's tweet, immediately sent the link to Ray. Ray got the audio. Kevin pushed the button. We're going to hear that audio later. It's great. It's great stuff. If you haven't heard it, you're going to hear it. And Kevin's right. Z-Pac is right. They aren't at the level, Northwestern, where they can take plays off. Now, what I do hope they're doing, and I know Fitz would never admit it, but it would be smart to do it, is I hope they are spending X amount of time this week preparing for Ohio State and or Michigan. Maybe this week is the week.
Are you talking about the players or the coaches?
Excuse me?
The players or the coaches?
Both. They're one part
so
of practice.
Ahead?
One yes, because you know
one
because that's
time,
coming.
Man.
No.
That's
a game
yet.
That's coming.
I'm actually
up.
With you, Dustin. I think that there's
that's a game that's coming up.
I think you're that smart.
I think it's smart if the coaches are doing it. I don't know that I'd devote practice time to it and then
you
go.
You
got to install what you're working up, though.
Millennials can't contain all that information in their tiny little
and
heads.
I think it keeps them excited, right? I mean, maybe the team isn't excited about playing Minnesota, playing the Illini. They are excited about trying to beat Ohio State and trying to beat Michigan. And so I think that would keep their attention.
The good news.
Both those teams could beat you if you weren't excited about it. Go ahead.
And you know what? And you are exactly right about that, Molly, because they're still Northwestern, right?
Michael, did you have a...
No, I was merely going to crack about my Illini again, but I think Lovey and his Santa beard will have plenty to do in the coming 2 months.
Hey,
here.
Mike, keep your six-year-old away from Illini jerseys, okay?
You know what? I'm one of the few people who still watch Illini football, and my football-loving son... He just can't do it. He doesn't have it in him to watch Illini football.
Smart kid.
Him. There you go.
All right, that's the 5-5. 312-644-6767. The Bears open as 3-point favorites. Is that a sign of respect or not? And are they a legitimate MC contender? Shouldn't they be favored by more? Is Khalil Mack the Bears' most valuable defensive player? We know that. Who is their least valuable defensive player? Who would you attack if you were going after that Bears defense? Which United Center tenant had the worst loss last night? Was it the Bulls at home to an awful team, or was it the Blackhawks blowing a lead and losing in overtime? Jimmy Butler trade with the Timberwolves. Does it change anything you thought about the Bulls and their deal? And what's the bigger steal now out of all these deals we've seen? And are the Sixers the new favorite in the East? Pat Fitzgerald said that they're not going to worry about these two games. They are going to worry about games. They're not going to worry about resting guys or anything like that. Is that the right way to go for the Northwestern Wildcats? 312-644-6767. Mullion Hall on the score.